Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive. We are awaiting our brother and friend, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. And as soon as he arrives in the studio, we will bring him to you. There's a lot of good things happening. We've just come back from a very successful Mosqueers Convention. Overwhelming success. And large number of believers throughout the United States. We also had visitors from even as far as Panama. And believers from Bermuda, I'm told even South America. So,
I think they're going to marry him.
So the community of Imam Muhammad is growing. Despite all the challenges, the people are going to come and they're going to support Imam Waruddin Muhammad II. This is clear. A lot of stuff is happening. A lot of people are pretending. A lot of people faking it. Some of the people are confused, and some people are just looking for positions. And as a direct result of that, they'll support the wrong people. But this is a separation time. As soon as this separation is over, this community is going to make phenomenal progress. Phenomenal progress in education, and business, and culture, and also in government, and all the temporary things that we see happening with the Republican Party, Democratic Party, all that stuff will soon pass away. Once we have some boots on the ground, men primarily who are willing to get out into the streets and battle, not for ego purposes, not to see how much they can burn somebody, not to see how much they can debate someone, but to show their love, to share the message that Almighty God has given to us. In fact, they're willing to claim their inheritance. And our inheritance is none other than the word God, as it has been given to Imam Muhammad. Imam Muhammad has been given insight. Some said the tafsir of Imam Muhammad. That's not sufficient. A ta'wil of Imam Muhammad. That's not sufficient. Imam Muhammad has been given a message from God for humanity and the people in most need of that teachings is the so-called American Negro, the African American, the people who are recovering from the effects of slavery. I'm honored and privileged to have with us our brother and friend, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. We're going to change the format somewhat, and I'm going to interview him, and perhaps he'll interview me. I have had a rough week, very busy planning for the Savior's Day program, which we're hoping to, which will, God willing, be in Newark, New Jersey, expecting thousands to be here. We're expecting to grow. We'll be back in Tinley Park in 2016 for a highly successful convention. I am more encouraged than I've ever been in my life. I'm more enthused than I've ever been in my life about the power of Almighty God to transform my people. And I told the people in Chicago at the convention that Imam Muhammad was a fulfillment of the requisition of the soul of African-American people for completion. And all of the great African-American thinkers made sure that they alluded to Al-Islam, starting with the great Booker D. Washington, going on up, but not just any form of Islam, Al-Islam. So I'm going to shut up and proceed to ask our brother what he makes of the Republican Party's debate, and particularly the ascension of Dr. Benjamin Carson's brother, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. Thank you.
Let me just say, brother Imam, assalamu alaikum, and to the audience, it's always an experience to be able to even contemplate that the voice would be going out and there would be some kind of contact with your audience, regardless of the quantity. We know if there's a listener, that in itself bespeaks of quality. Let me say, in all seriousness, and being a student of politics, that there was no debate. If you understand a debate, there must be some basis in fact. Baits are something for fish. When you are fishing in the waters of the emotions of the people, debate means that you're going beyond that and you're engaging in rational talk and argument about policy position. All I could hear is people fishing in the waters of the emotionalism of the most extreme part of the Republican base. Not the Republican base, the most extreme part of the Republican base. And that extreme part is not concerned about policy interests or religious orientation. They're hooked on trying to get revenge against President Barack Hussein Obama. And however extreme and irrational that attempt to be made. And we can see this when this extreme person that was on a bait last night in New Hampshire threw all that talk out to Donald Trump. And Trump would not challenge him because he is a master of baiting the extreme portion of the Republican base. That's our brother Ben Carson. He's an all right fella. I don't see any glaring maliciousness about his demeanor, but he's completely over his head in the political and governmental world. Obviously, he's an outstanding scientist of neurosurgery. Can't anyone take anything away from him, but being strong at neurosurgery has nothing to do with being strong in politics, but his intellect gives him the ability to be able to state some kind of position that's rooted in reason, even though he too is a great beta, if you take your eyes off him. Are you still there?
Yes, sir. What do you make of the presence of Congressman Andre Carson's presence at the Muslim convention, given a wholehearted endorsement to the mosque cares and Imam Warthin Dean Muhammad II, and what he said, he believed in 10 years we might have a Muslim president in light of Mr. Trump ignoring the problems that comes of ignorance,
What do you? Yeah, just give me your assessment where you are with that.
I think that Representative Carson made a point of stipulation, which is certainly possible, and there would have to be a long-term strategic effort to make that possible. But I think it's a very visionary statement that's in within pragmatic strategic reach, no doubt about it.
He also he advocated us building a super PAC, and I believe, as he does, that there are millions of unmasked Muslims. He didn't say this. This is my word, but he was saying that it's about 2.5 million followers of Imam Waqidin Muhammad, and I know that they are there wherever, every city I've traveled throughout these United States, not necessarily in masajid communities, but in just the streets. And I generally give the greetings to every African American I see, and I would get a response from them. And I kind of take a census, and I randomly ask them questions. So I know that support is strong. We just have to find the algorithm and mobilize. And once mobilized, I think we're going to have a potent community, and I think it also will bring I want to ask you, what do you see as the pressing issues of this week? And if you can name two or three of them, we'll just discuss them. What do you think of the pressing issues of this week?
Well, you have the pressing economic and financial situation with Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve. Why did they blink and decided to postpone the raising of the interest rate? What does that portend? And when they do decide to raise it, how is that going to impact the economy in the state of black folk? That's an issue that is looming in the background that we must keep an eye on, just like Wall Street and the international global economy is keeping an eye on that question. Secondly, one must understand how God is intensifying the contradictions and opening the way for the coming of Muhammad and Ahmed as an influence in American culture. For instance, the international Muslim world today is known for the bomb. But Prophet Muhammad said, science is my weapon. And he said, in essence, the pen of the scholar is more important than the blood of a martyr. I'm paraphrasing. So you had this young man, Muhammad Ahmed, where Ruha Allah was using to defend the prophet. And he's defending the prophet now, but he's not defending the misguided Muslim world. We have to make that distinction, because any culture or civilization that hate Muhammad will be cut off from future hope. But some of these Muslims deserve to be hated. Some of these savages, some of these barbarians and Muslim God deserve to be resented by every civilized human being. So this young man brought an invented, created clock to school. But they went at him as if the bomb was the prophet's weapon. But God defended the prophet and said, no, Ahmed Muhammad brought a system where science is my weapon. understood that issue of the week. So when he tweeted this man, he referred to the science aspect and invited him to the White House as a creative scientist. He knew that what Ahmed and Muhammad was about, science. And he said that's what makes America great, because during the Renaissance, the followers of Muhammad brought science back to the Western world. That's another very, very, very important issue. The third issue in my mind is how long the general mass of African-American people are going to be dead to the essential question as to why is it that a certain powerful segment in our establishment are absolutely afraid to death of the Al-Quran and Prophet Muhammad, and implicit in that, there's a fear of Imam Wahdi Muhammad as well. At some point, where would African American make the connection that if my enemies that I call racist, that still reactionary racist part of American order, if they fear Quran and fear Muhammad and fear Wahdi Muhammad, then that must be something that I might need to seriously investigate as a possible benefit to me. Now, there's a man, a political figure in New York, represent Brownsville in Brooklyn. His name is Borland, William Borland Jr. Too many of our politicians and clerical people are in the world of Borland, and they won't grow up and ask that serious question. What is it about Al-Quran and the example of the Prophet that those who want to see my race progress fear? And is there something good in it for me? If they are fearing it, should I embrace it? It's time for the immature thinkers, those leaders amongst us that's in Borland, to start asking it, because the contradictions are too great. There's too much fear. There's too much apprehension. And I'm not talking about the reaction to terrorism. Obviously, there is an effort to subvert any open expression of excellent al-Islam in this country. We can see it now. So this little innocent boy with the name of Ahmed and Muhammad come to school with a scientific urge, and he's clear like he's the son of Osama bin Laden. That's a very serious issue that God brought into the ether in terms of contemporary American global society.
My brother?
Yes.
Did you hear my question?
Did I hear your question? No, that was static on the line. Matter of fact, let me flip the script for a moment. The media has been running a clip of John McCain, Senator John McCain, when a lady at a campaign event in Lakeville, Minnesota, when President Barack Hussein Obama was still a senator and a mystery to the American people. She said he was an Arab and not a Muslim. I mean, and not a American Christian. This guy last night said something similar. But Senator McCain took the microphone and debunked the ignorance of this American citizen. At that time, he did that when there was a mystery surrounding Obama. After 7 years of being a president, where everybody could observe his family, his lifestyle, and his presidency, you would think it would be an easier lift to challenge that now. Why is it that Donald Trump did not challenge that kind of idea as Senator John McCain did 7 years ago? Beloved audience, I don't know whether you can hear me, but it appears we have technical difficulties. There appears to be a disconnect in status, static on the line. If I can reconnect with the ma'am, I'm going to bring it to his attention.
I'm sorry, my brother. I can hear you, but I had the button on mute while I was listening to your answer. I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
Did you get the question that I just gave you?
Yes, I did. My answer would be, I don't think we've made our case. I just don't think the Muslim. I don't think there's been a real Dawah movement in America. I remember Imam Muhammad had wanted to hold a rally in Washington with the Christians of the Catholic faith, and it was very poorly attended. I think that the Imam Muhammad's movement with the folklore, his meeting with Pope John Paul, was never publicized. I don't think we really got a picture of what Imam Muhammad is about. And I don't think, I know, I attend many all throughout the New York Metroplex area. I just don't see where we have people really know us. I think we are very vague. I think we are not clear about what we are about. I'm talking Muslim African American. I think there's sporadic attempts. But I think we have made a concerted case to the American people. First, African Americans. I know African Americans. I don't know. I'll test my.
But how is that relevant? I feel you, which I agree, to the image and understanding of who and what Barack Hussein Obama is, when he's been constantly in the news, even under best circumstances. There never would have been a situation where we could have had constant access to the news, putting the man's message out there. Everybody has seen Obama now for the last 7 years. Why would people insist that he's not a Christian, that he's not a Muslim, and not a citizen of this country? And did Donald Trump have a duty to clear that up?
Well, I think Mr. Trump is a typical politician of the white supremacy ilk. I think John McCain was a statesman, and because of perhaps his slave holding background, he felt a sense of guilt. I don't think Trump feels that. I think that Trump is playing up on it. I think there's a lot of stir. My bigger concern is, what are we going to do to develop a Dawah movement in America to present our case firstly to the Muslim, to African Americans? That's what my big concern is. And I see us lacking in that response. I get Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump is a typical Bilbo, a typical Huey Long, a typical Strong Thurmond, and that 41% retrograde white supremacy that still suffers from the devil mind. I understand that. But what my interest is, what are we going to do? How are we going to change our own circumstances? How are we going to come together and present a picture of what we're all about? I think that's my biggest concern.
I understand, and let me ask you this. You have a certainly expanded mind being a student of Al-Quran. Are you suggesting then that because that's your bigger concern, there's no secondary or other concerns that's on your radar?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but my primary concern is...
For instance, if an African-American, and let's get beyond the Muslim context, if someone had a tool of potential candidate presidents in these United States that African-Americans are a problem, we need to get rid of all of them, which really, as far as my knowledge of history, that's the first time that ethnic cleansing of any minority group has ever been brought up in American politics. If someone say they're a presidential candidate, we need to get rid of a whole group, that's a form of ethnic cleansing. And I know if a person, even African-American Muslims, has said that about African-Americans, even though we may have concern that our people are killing each other and not really doing what we're supposed to do, wandering in the desert, we still would have been concerned about that kind of climate being advocated in the country.
Oh, I understand that. I believe you, me. Being from Lynchburg, Virginia, I certainly understand white supremacy cues. I understand subliminal suggestions, and I understand overt forms of bigotry and white supremacy acts. And certainly, Mr. Trump implicitly endorsed that lady.
It was a man, but this man said, it's one thing to say Obama is a Muslim and not a Christian and not American. It's another level when you say we need to get rid of all Muslims. That's very, very dangerous type rhetoric, because if you study history, when that rhetoric hit a society, you can end up with a whole group being targeted for extreme repressive measures. And I've just never seen that kind of rhetoric used where a whole group was that was talking about eliminating a whole group to an American presidential candidate. So it's not so much Trump as it is that idea being thrown out there.
I'm aware of it, and I'm aware of Trump, and I understand. You know, what I'm saying is, brother, ma'am, I recognize the 41% of American people that are white supremacists. I also recognize the fact that the Quran talks, what happens when the wild animals are let out of their habitation, and that person certainly was a wild animal let out of their habitation. I believe we will defeat these types of people. And I'm concerned that we get strong, unify ourselves, and form coalitions with good, decent people in America who will condemn this kind of attempt at ethnic cleansing. I just don't believe they're going to be successful.
I don't. Well, that's the faith we must have. But still, though, that doesn't mean, I don't think, I could be wrong, sometime you and I differ on these kinds of fine points. I still think that we need to keep an eye on that kind of thing. Now, because when that kind of rhetoric hit, it intimidates some of the people that we're going to have to try to bring together with strength. And so we have to calculate that in terms of what strategies we can use to debate that fear in the people in our group that we want to get strong.
And I think that's why we have people who are now meeting with the Pope. I think there are many of us who have formed coalitions with Jews and others, and I think that's necessary for us to continue to do this coalition building and build a brick wall against this kind of white supremacy, bigotry, and ethnic cleansing. I think that that's the attempt. I heard those people loud and clear. I'm unaware of them. I'm from Lynchburg, Virginia. I can smell a hound dog a mile away, and I know what they're up to. But I also know what God says, that they plot and God plots, and they are the best. God is the best of plotters. And I think
there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. And we can understand that, but we can still, I'm going to move on because we can have that kind of understanding, but still have a little pragmatic tie your camel approach to all these matters.
Let me ask you this. What is your pragmatic tie your camel approach? I'd like to hear that.
Well, first of all, you can't ignore these concerns because if we're going to form coalitions, if these things are eaten away at the people to a certain extent who we desire to form a coalition with, we have to be sensitive to that. For instance, this week I was on a radio show in Selma. I presented a strong image over whether or not it was right to appoint a Caucasian police chief over the city of Selma. The man, the council, made that call. Well, I'm thoroughly familiar with Selma municipal government. Okay? And I'm thoroughly familiar with law enforcement and the personnel therein. And so, with what I knew, my preference would have been to have an African American. But given the real facts on the ground, the choice that was made was the only choice. Now, I understand this atmosphere that's out there in Selma, Georgia, among blacks and whites, okay, about somehow Muslims not being within the framework of sensitive human nature. So I took a stand based upon justice and righteousness, knowing that these sensitivities were out there. It wasn't 5 minutes before sensible blacks and sensible whites was calling in on that show supporting my position on that. Even though I know that many of them are caught up in this crowd, this atmosphere that's out there in terms of all these events surrounding Al-Islam. I did what you say we ought to do, stand upon what we're all about, but in my presentation, I presented it in a manner that would impact the sensitivities of those people that I knew were ambivalent about me, in a sense, even though they like me because of all this stuff swirling around the image of Muslims in America. And I think that was a very effective strategy. But I led with this thing where we got to get strong. We got to get ourselves together. I was strong and I was together on the issue. But at the same time, I was looking with circumspection at the, some of the fears and insecurities of the audience as to what's going on in America now. I don't see how we can be blind to it.
Well, I certainly am not. I'm out here every day working in it, so I'm not blind to it. I have a strategy to deal with it. I think that, you know.
I understand. And we're basically talking about a nuance in terms of strategic approach.
I think what we have to do is be willing to spend money, advertise our views. I look at the American, how the people. This is a land of free ideas. You have to spend money to push your ideas. And I think that's what we have to do. I just think we have to be more aggressive and pushing our ideas. We're too laid back as a group. I don't think we've done enough to even win our own people to our views, to share our views. I think if we shared the views of Imam Warthy Muhammad's strategies and approaches, I think we'd win a lot more people. I see it happening.
There's no doubt about that. I mean,
I think Bill Gates,
social
there's
no doubt about that. Hey, we're in a 100% agreement on that. There was this video of a young African American that's gone viral on the internet. I don't know whether you're aware of it. A young African American male that attends, ironically, Frederick Douglass High School in Baltimore. And there was allegedly some incident where this other student had done something, and the boy thought that he had removed the visor off his helmet, football helmet, and he asked the boy about it. He denied it, and this young man began to beat him unmercifully. I mean, in a brutal, dog-like fashion, to the extent that the victim had a seizure right there in school, severe head concussion, several broken bones in the face. And my question, I don't know the setup about the schools in Baltimore, but I never did see an adult in a field, in a seed, to try to break up the brutal beating. Now, what does that say about our educational system? And does this savage-like, uncontrollable behavior of this young African-American teenager, what does it say about the state of our young men in this day and time?
That's why I believe we have to have a movement to teach our people. I think this I think we have not only teach them, we may have to reach them. Imam Muhammad put a proposal out there: Blight Arrest Pioneer Patrol, New Earth Team. I think I know Baltimore. I know it quite well, and I was the imam there. So early in the 70s, I recognized that what we are seeing in Baltimore would come to pass. I think that we just haven't addressed these problems. I just think that there's a certain, I don't want to name that group, that's out on the streets trying, claiming that they're teaching our people. But I don't think our people have any faith in them. I think you have to be a person that they sense have a firm belief in God, a firm belief in them, and a firm love for them. I've been in some very dangerous neighborhoods back in the Nation of Islam days, and with love and strength, I've seen many of our people transform. I think that's what we got to get back to. We got to get back to that. We should be informed by the Quran. We should be informed by Muhammad. We should be informed by the insight. But we should have been able to fashion a medicine to heal our sick people. And that's what this program is all about. This program is really not a religious program per se. The tagline is recovering from the effects of slavery. I'm going to have to play on this program a tape by Imam Muhammad that informs me. He said our people are too sick, even, and this is my word, translation, to even make a choice about religion. They need to have our mind healed. I just note with sadness that Dr. Price, I believe his name is Dr. Greer, Price and Greer, one of them passed, and he had written a book called Black Rage. I just think this is an unmitigated anger and pain and angst that has come from slavery that we just haven't dealt with, and it has to be dealt with. And I went back to school to study psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, and to figure out ways that we can address the psyche of our people. I mean, I know religious African Americans who at the drop of a dime may bust you upside the head. They read Quran. They got Imam Muhammad down. And I see him. I just recently had to counsel a family, and the violence in the family was terrible. They were good Muslims, but they were crazy. And I would be, like Imam Muhammad said, he said, I know you all. You aren't fooling me. You're fresh Muslims, but old niggers. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. Niggerism is a learned behavior. We didn't come to America as a destroyed people or damaged. We came to America as human beings that was upright and sensitive. That has been beaten out of us, and we have to heal. I think we have to address those kinds of psychological problems. Why are we violent?
Well, speaking of Baltimore, you know, we had a discussion. I think you probed and inquired, and we got to the meat of this appointment of this young a prosecutor in Baltimore, Sister Mosby. Now, since we've had that discussion, I noticed that some jurors refused to make her recuse herself from the case, and also refused to remove the case from the city of Baltimore. In conjunction with that, the mayor, Stephanie Rollins Blake, has announced that she will not be running for re-election as mayor of the city of Baltimore. Now, you discussed in detail some of these problems when they were occurring. Now we've seen history unfold. What do you think about those developments I just identified?
I think that I'm going to think about. First of all, I have to congratulate the former Masjid attorney William Murphy, and also former Judge Billy Murphy was the attorney for the Masjid. When I came to Baltimore, I needed to retain an attorney for the Masjid, and I knew retained Billy Murphy, so I congratulate him on that verdict, of that settlement. Billy Murphy was at that time the president of the West Baltimore chapter of the Friends of WCIW, so I do make a disclaimer. I think that the mayor of Baltimore and the previous mayor of Baltimore have grown out of touch. And I think the leadership there in Baltimore is just out of touch with the people. And I include the preachers of all stripes, whether they got a bean pie in their hands or a pork chop in their hands. I think that they have failed our people. They have a lot of mega churches there. I think there's a large segment of our people are just lost. And I don't mean unretrievable, but I believe that what God says in the Quran and gives us a picture of the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer, I think we have to be very redemptive in reaching those people. I think the mayor has failed on that account, and I think that her time has run out. I don't know what the political future of Baltimore, but I certainly intend to spend time in Baltimore as this ministry grows. I think we need to spend a lot of time in West Baltimore, where a lot of our people are 50 to 60 years being neglected, to invite them to it, understand themselves, to do what Imam Muhammad called for, and that was to set up a business of survival institute to teach them human development. I believe that's number one. And I think then, secondly, you could come in with some economic programs to teach financing and micro investment so we can develop some industrial skills in our people. I think I don't know what's going to happen politically. I'm very encouraged by what the judge did and not granting the defense motion for a change of venue. I'm glad that there is a settlement, but I'm very frightened of the fact that the people are still unsettled. We have a preacher, Reverend Jamal Bryant, who is becoming a contender, perhaps the next Al Sharpton, and I'm predicting that he will be the next Al Sharpton, that the media will elect him as such. I've known him for a child. I don't have great much respect for him, other than his rhetorical skills. And the reason I don't have great much respect for him is because of the fact he's joined with Minister Louis Farrakhan, justice or else. I don't think you can have it both ways. I think you have to call for people to really, if you're a Christian, follow your scripture. If you're a Muslim, follow the Quran. I don't think we should just tell our people anything. And I think there's a problem that there's no real faith-based leadership in Baltimore that's recognized. There is an imam there, Brother Imam Mukti. I was with him at the Mosque's convention, and I've been encouraging him to do more outreach because he's a trained psychologist in addition to being an imam. He's also trained in addictionology, and much of the problems there in Baltimore directly connected to the pandemic of heroin and cocaine and many other drugs and the effects that it devastates the family. So it really needs a lot of work in that town.
Well, if we look at, for instance, the brutal beating of this young man in the school in Baltimore, and we reflect back a couple of weeks ago when Shannon Miles, this African-American in Texas, came up from the blind side against this law enforcement man, Officer Daryl Goforth, and shot him point blank 15 times in the back and the head. There must be some magnification and intensification in this rage that we may not have picked up. What kind of subtle happenings you think may have intensified already a raging condition in the soul of the African-American male?
I think it's been a support kind of rhetoric. I think he's pushed, promoted, valorized, and there's a word made as a hero or made an icon for this kind of poisonous rhetoric. Jada Pinkett and Will Smith just gave him $150,000. I think they would be better still if they gave the $150,000 to me so I can engage in a peace movement. I'm working now with the mayor here in Linden, New Jersey. I guess you heard about that. My town made the news. We had a young man that I happen to know, and I won't judge his case, that beat a man with a football helmet because of some call in the game. This violence that's in African-American men is the rage that came from beatings and killings and terror. We have experienced terror. That's why I'm very sensitive to the terroristic statement by the lady in New Hampshire. I'm not unaware of that. But I know that if we address the terror that's within our own mind and explain to our people why they are angry, why they are terrorized, and why they terrorize others, I think we'll go a long ways to healing a lot of this problem. I've been trying to get my movement up off the ground called the Urban Peace Ministry. In fact, the rest of my life, I'm going to spend time working to get African-American men to practice nonviolence towards each other. I think we do that every time we explode. You look at my girl wrong, and I'm ready to shoot you. You look at me wrong in the eyes, you know, I have two young African-American male children that are 18 and 14. I have two other grown ones. And I just listen to their conversations. We live in an urban area, not very suburban, really, not suburban, but pretty suburban area. And the young men of my son's age are terrified to walk the streets. My son was walking down the street recently. A lesbian woman told him, "Hey, little man, give me that bicycle. And if you mess with me, I'll stick you." They tell me that the young people of that age group are saying to each other, "Oh, he's trapping," as though that's something to be valorized. I think this empire I think this culture, this poisonous culture of death, as Pope John Paul said, is choking the very life out of us. And I don't think we are having a loud enough voice to address this problem, to call the good, sincere people of us back to sanity, that want sanity. There are a lot of young people, they don't want to participate in that culture. But where are our recreation centers funded by Muslims, funded by the good people, so we can have a place, a refuge for our young people that want to go right?
Well, now, some of these very tough problems that you're talking about, I had the opportunity to observe the mayor of Newark, Ross Baraka, with NFL great running back Jim Brown. They were on national news, and evidently Mayor Baraka had Mr. Brown in town to work with him. Are you familiar with that effort? And,
absolutely. I'm a part of that effort. John, we'll be meeting with the mayor's staff on Wednesday. I shouldn't announce it, but we are planning to bring Imam Wahabuddin Muhammad in town, the second, to work on. We're going to put a big focus on. Mayor Ross Baraka is a very extraordinarily innovative person and has done something on these blocks where there's killing. He occupies the block, set up tables right on the street, and just administer to the people. We're going to have a meeting Wednesday of all the clergy that's going to go into these neighborhoods, and we're just going to talk with these people. And I believe that our voice will be stronger than any of our good Christian friends. I'm very close. I tell my Christian preachers, y'all can't keep me out. Y'all can try to, but I love you, and ain't nothing you can do about it. I still go to the Baptist Ministers Conference on Monday. Go to the AME conference.
Well, now, his politics, I was listening to some of his creative and innovative strategies that he was describing, and really, in all seriousness, he is the first African-American political that I've heard that's really on the municipal level, that's under some kind of Islamic wisdom, if he's not a Muslim, that approaches municipal government and solving our problems with the way I tried to do it when I was involved in several municipal government.
You know what?
And it really was a sight for my sore eyes.
I think one of the saddest things that's happened is that he has gotten very poor cooperation from the Muslim leadership there in Newark. Mayor Ross Baraka was the principal of one of the worst high schools in Newark, Central High School. They were on the verge of closing it down. And 4 years, Mayor Ross Baraka turned that school around to be a top school where people could be. He's one of the most creative and most gifted leaders we have had. And I attribute that largely to his father. I think it's innate. I don't think just Islamic. He has very strong. I don't want to talk about his religious affiliation. But I will say this. His daddy, Amiri Baraka, was a very creative person. When we start having leaders that love people, love is a very powerful, transformative idea. The problem we've had with leaders among us, they exhibit love. People know when you're for real. They know when you love them. Now, I see young men who are slinging, and I've asked them, young man, you know, you're really cheaping yourself doing this. And I show them love. I'm known in the town, letting everybody in town know me as Imam. Some call me Reb, and my brothers say, oh, you ain't no Reverend. So I don't care what they call me. They're respecting me. And I've connected to Ross Baraka. But I think the problem is these imams in the city of Newark, most of them, have not reached out enough to the mayor. All they want is grants. But I'm sorry, I got a little angry, but God, may God forgive me, may you forgive me. You all forgive me. But because I've been intimately involved with the mayor and the mayor of this town, Linden, New Jersey. We're working on the same thing to try to ameliorate this violence, to work with our young people. We won't have enough jails. We won't have enough programs. The real answer is to change the human being one person at a time. And Mayor Barack is doing a phenomenal, great job.
Well, I've asked you a series of question after question in staccato fashion, and you fielded them quite adequately. So now I'm going to turn the inquiry status back over to you.
Yes, I wanted to ask you. I didn't intend to even engage this way. I was waiting to listen, but I do want to ask you about this massive sentencing of people like Kwame Kilpatrick, when the former mayor of Detroit. When President Obama went to FCI El Reno, Oklahoma, there's brother Kwame Kilpatrick there. I mean, I don't think he belongs there for 18 years. I happen to know William Boylan. I don't think he deserves the time he got. I want to talk about this fast sentencing. I don't even think Lugovich deserves it. I just don't understand how we can just sit up and give people 10, 15, 20 years in the prison.
Sometimes it's not a matter of giving. Sometimes the judges, especially in the federal context, are locked in by legislative mandates in terms of sentencing. And what you have all over the country now is an acknowledgement that approach has had catastrophic results. And so now you have a movement to reverse that trend and to return discretion back to the judge so that appropriate sentences can be given based upon the facts of a case and not some generalized mandate.
So you would be for revising the federal sentencing guidelines for federal crimes and
state as well.
Yeah.
State as well.
I think it's a crime. I mean, probably not a crime. Just to get discretionary power away from a judge. I just think that bodes badly for judicial temperament. I mean, just judges. I know federal judges have a couple of them who are friends of mine who refuse their senior status. They refuse to try drug cases. Just for that reason. These guys got mandatory sentences. How do we reverse that? I think if the Muslims got involved...
Well, if you think about it, really, with the legislature passing those provisions, they, in a way, constructively, I'd use that language, usurp and co-opted the power of the judiciary. One of the beauties of being a judge is to be able to look at the entire panorama of the case, weigh everything, and use discretion as to how much punishment should be meted out in the sentencing process, and to make that declaration in advance, sitting in the state house on a judiciary committee or something like that, or some commission or panel of legislative people, notwithstanding the cogent advice they may have been receiving from experts, I think to me was a bad process in the beginning. And as a legislative person, I never did like when those kinds of things came before us. I've always wanted to see a judge do his job, exercise his temperamental discretion, his sensitivities, and his first-hand live view of a case, and not a cold distance kind of logical summary as to how the process alter work somewhere in a cold, dry place of logic instead of right on the bench with human sentiments and on-the-spot judgment.
Well, let me ask you this question. You had a judge, a federal judge, well-known federal judge, that I think August the 1st resigned from the federal judiciary, perhaps just in the face of possible impeachment. I believe his name was Judge Sullivan. Do you think that was fair? The Fifth Circuit Judicial Council was deliberating, and suddenly we noticed a resignation. Do you think it's fair that a judge who was charged with beating his wife, had an ACD, was removed from the bench and decided, removed, but I mean under pressure, decided to resign? Is that fair?
Well, now that's an arid question, and admittedly, I haven't followed the case the way you have, but I'll say this. You're in a strong position as a sitting judge, and I know pressure will bust a steel pipe, but it'll take more than pressure to get me to resign. As a sitting judge, you're going to have to pry me out of there, because judge's seat is well posted in the ground, in my opinion. And I don't know what kind of facts or pressure, whatever, that they could lay on this judge to get him to give up his seat. I just don't. And that's about the size of how I would look at that. So I would like to phrase it in the sense of whether it was fair or unfair. I would like to phrase it in, what does this man know about himself and his activities that would make him susceptible to pressure him to give up a judicial seat, which is normally firmly rooted. I mean, firmly rooted.
But, you know, Samba says fat for the goose as it is for the gander, because, as you know, the judge was a very harsh sentencer of your former governor. And I saw your governor, former governor, brought in handcuffed into the judge's court, though the judge was forced to recuse himself. Well, the Fifth Circuit ordered him not to try that case again. I just thought it was very bad to see him. And it's, Tom would wonder, is that poetic justice? Would you?
Let me say, when he did that, he did not really waive his judiciary cap. Inherently in the law, jurors are to avoid engaging in political questions. And what happened to Don Siegelman in Alabama, I wouldn't say that he may not have violated something, but the overall way it was handled was basically a political question, trying to preempt a political possibility. And thus, to get out of the way for good in Alabama, this particular political figure, who's the only one who has the potential to win a statewide gubernatorial race. So you're trying to prevent a political possibility. So you're not engaging in judicial activity. You're involved in political process, resolving political questions.
So is it fair that the judge now got a little bit of his own medicine?
A little understanding in the human reality that what comes around goes around. Maybe that happened in the case of this judge.
Let's move to some internet. I love the judiciary, and I don't know for what some odd reason, historical reason, I've kind of kept up with the history of judicial improprieties, particularly with the federal bench. You know, while we're talking about that, I don't know what to make of this judge, former judge, who's actually impeached now, Congressman Al C. Hastings, and according to the Constitution, he shouldn't even be in Congress. But if the reports are true, I'm wondering about him. He's advocated bombing Iran. Is that true? Judge Al C. Hastings impeached Judge Al C. Hastings.
I'm not sure about that, but my understanding that he was might have been a vehement opponent of this recent pact, but and I don't know whether or not the fact that he thinks that he can be human and black issues and totally insensitive to any other human issues other than black folk, or whether or not he's looking over his shoulders because he may be politically in a district that's heavily Jewish tinged. I don't know, but I think it may be the latter.
Well, Congressman Hastings has had, I've always been a admirer of Congressman Hastings until recently, but I just thought Congressman Hastings, really, if he had been removed from the Congress, legally he shouldn't even be there because you've been impeached from a federal office, though there's a division of power. I was just kind of shocked.
Well,
for a long time, and I was just literally shocked to hear that statement coming from him. I mean, you know, damn,
but,
politics.
But, brother, you studied the Congress. Some of our most so-called progressive and even quasi-radical forces, that when it comes to dealing with some kind of parity between Israel and the Muslim world, they met up. If you study what happened, there were Hispanic legislative people coming out in support of Obama in New York. Before many of the African American legislative people, including Hakeem Jeffrey, who, if you listen to him talk about black issues, you would think that he's almost a radical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it very contradictory. I find, let me just share with you something about Hakeem Jeffries. Hakeem Jeffries, who has a Muslim name and known to come to Boston to campaign, when he was running a political campaign against Roger Green, who was a Muslim, he actually came out and attacked Roger Green for being a Muslim, even though he has a Muslim first name, Hakeem Jeffries. I think he has a middle name as well. You know, it just seemed to me that slime just grows very parasitically. And I actually had the opportunity to correct him and told him that was a low blow. These people, as we get politically strong, need to have a reckoning that play this kind of religious bias. I don't think they're any better than the guy up there, that lady who, ignorant, I don't know which is, the man or whoever was in New Hampshire. I've seen them play some ugly politics. And I'm just really taken back by Congressman Hastings, ex-Judge Hastings, who was impeached. He's the first person to be impeached from the federal judiciary who hadn't been convicted of a crime, even though the Fifth Circuit said he fraudulently defended himself. So I don't know. But I just got pissed off with him, and I find
how. Well, you know, I understand that, and I got upset with Cory Booker, acting like it would take him forever to decide when to come down and favor what's
right.
Well,
you know, I tell you something. I'm going to tell you something about Cory Booker. He also shares my slave name. I told him that. But here's the problem with him. He was so anti-Muslim that he wouldn't even grant an interview to the Muslim Journal. So these men play very, very sick politics. And it's time for the Muslims to become very aware, not Muslims, African-Americans become aware. of the manipulation of our people and the shameless Uncle Tomisms that we've seen practiced by some of them. And and some of these guys, I don't know, one of them I know has a Muslim father. Now, I don't know what his vote was on this issue. But, I mean, it's just shameless.
Well, what I'm thinking of, Jersey, New York-based African-American political appears to be somewhat over the Jewish shell shop. Now, what kind of power they have to reckon with in the area, I don't know. Even the way Mayor Koch, the former mayor of New York, handled Al Sharpton in a conversation I saw once, suggested that even he was somehow shell-shocked about not offending Jewish interests in that corridor. Now, but I don't know whether he offended anybody, but I know that they moved him from his television slot. What do you think that was all about?
Well, I haven't followed Reverend Sharpton's removal. It might have been. Reverend Sharpton played some very dirty politics, and there's a group of African-American broadcasters that sued him because we now know that, and I'm going to say this, I may be punished for it. Comcast has now controlled about 70% of the television viewing in America. And I think this is a shame. This borders on monopoly. So maybe Reverend Sharpton got back his medicine. He did that dirty work, and they threw him to the curb, and perhaps they got another Negro in waiting to come forth. That's very provocative.
Well, I think that he's going to have a little slide on Sunday morning, but to go from 5 days a week.
Well, I think they're punishing him. I think they're sending a signal to him. He's done a great job for them, and they decided to remove him. But, you know, look, he'll go into obscurity. I don't know whether some of you have read The Invisible Man. They make leaders and break leaders. And I'm telling you something. I don't know whether most of us know this or not. The only independent group still in America that doesn't get its money from anybody else but themselves, and that's the Mosqueers group. And that's why I support them, because we're not receiving grants from the government, not receiving grants from corporate America. Whoever pays your bills, really, in a sense, that's who owns you. And they create and make Negroes, and when they get tired of them, they get rid of them, retire them like you retire a horse. So I would just warn these Negroes that they will have to come back to our neighborhoods. But I also would urge us to push, and I should be asking questions. Let me just shut up. Because I don't know, you've got me kind of hot today. I'm sort of, when I think about this, I just, you know, just to see us. And that's why we need a massive self-help.
Well, before we came on the air, you made a suggestion that I could also question and present certain inquiries to you, and I've done that, and I think you have painted these matters with a clear and accurate, but broad brush, you've covered a lot of territory, and I hope the audience is listening, and because you provided some very insightful answers.
Well, I certainly didn't intend to. I intended to come on the air today and listen to you, and I want to share with the audience. My opinions really are on Sundays. I try to be a radio host. I wouldn't want somebody to come to my house. And, you know, I was on a couple of radio shows not long. Well, I don't know. But anyway, the host talked more than I did. I didn't get a chance to say anything. Oh, wow. Maybe I'm invited on to be to listen. But I did want to do that with you. I am going to ask you a couple of questions. And I do want to go back to the debate. Well, let's go away from the debate. Let's go to the Democratic Party's process and ask you about what do you make of Mr. Senator, United States Senator. I don't like to call people just by their names. I think that's disrespect. I call Imam Warafuddin Muhammad II. I call you Imam Yusuf Salam. And when the people have voted and supported somebody, the United States Senator Bernie Sanders, what do you make of these big crowds and his rise in the polls, and particularly in New Hampshire and in Iowa? What do you make of that?
I think he, if you understand the Democratic Party, there's always going to be an energized part of the base that's not rooted in governmental centrism. And what you see is Senator Sanders inheriting the political win of President Barack Hussein Obama. If you can remember, he was drawing crowds over 100,000 from that same part of the Democratic base. So Sanders is an advocate of their issues, and he's a decent man, and he will always have, especially during the primary, that part of the base in the Democratic Party very active. But it would be a suicidal decision for the Democrats to nominate Senator Sanders, even though I don't really have a big problem. If the Republicans can claim that President Barack Hussein Obama is a socialist, and they got straight aim at Senator Sanders, and they can make that charge without real contradiction over and over and over and add, I don't think he could possibly win in a general election. I could be wrong, but that's my take on that.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think will be eventually the nominee of the Republican Party?
It doesn't matter in a sense, because and sometimes in my wild conspiratorial moments, they said that Bill Clinton made a call to former President Clinton made a call to presidential candidate Donald Trump right before the election. But believe me, Donald Trump is doing more to help the Democrats than anything Hillary or anybody else could do in the general election. He's strengthening the Obama coalition. Single white women, Latinos and Hispanics, African Americans, and others. And now you have a situation where the Republicans cannot win a general election without 40+% of the Hispanic vote. And Jeb Bush, who had a natural end to that group, now he would be lucky if he got 25% in the general election if he received a nomination. He would be lucky. So as a result of Trumpism, the Obama coalition has been crystallized. And when the Democratic nomination is over, and Michelle Obama and President Barack Hussein Obama get on the campaign trail, stimulating that base to get maximum turnout, then Donald Trump would have given the general election to the Democratic Party. It may not matter who's the nominee.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think about the possibility of Joe Biden and coming in to the election? I mean, I'm going to be clear.
In a vacuum and all things being neutral, I would love that. But at this particular time in his life, where he admittedly himself suggests that he's in emotional turmoil, I know the American media. It's just, they're just like a bunch of sharks. Oh, they can be all emotional and feigning emotional support. But as soon as he jump in, even though he's in this condition, somewhat not to himself emotionally, they're going to jump on him with all four. And it's not going to be nice. So I don't want to see him have to experience that.
So you believe then that Ms. Clinton would be the next president of the United States?
Not, but for Trump, if Trump put in his shenanigans, yes. But for what I see in her campaign, she would have been possibly beaten by a Republican, but for these shenanigans. Now he's wrecked the deal for them. That's my opinion.
Yes.
But she could have been beaten. At first, I didn't see it, but I'm looking at the way she campaigning and what have you, and she was beatable. I don't think it's going to happen now, Brother Imam. That's just my opinion. It's not prophecy. I can't see it.
Yes, sir. It's going to be very, very fascinating to run, to watch. I'm hoping that we will hitch up our horses, and I don't see why 10 years from now, 8 years now, I believe we could win. I really do. I'm telling you. I think it's convincing a person as I am, if I had the money. I said this at the convention. If I had the money right now, I would go right to Iowa. If I had the support, if the community was half to organize, I'd go right to Iowa, not for the fairgrounds, and not to New Hampshire to watch the fall. So it's beautiful at this time of year. I would go to say to the people, with all the white supremacists withstand, I still believe we could get a majority in this country and that we could win in this country. But if you don't believe it, you won't get it. I believe it could happen.
Well, I would never deny that, especially after having viewed what happened with President Barack Hussein Obama. And the truth of the matter is, when he ran, he was contending that he was Christian, but nobody really had absolute proof for that. So he could have been a Muslim, but he still won the presidency of these United States. So I don't deny that possibly within 10 years we could win an election. All of that is in the hands of God, but at some point we are going to have to try. But I don't believe in half-stepping. When you go to the banquet, you ought to be ready to eat a good meal.
Yes, sir. And I think if we just go and get cook a good meal and go out to the African-American community and appeal to them. And I just what Imam Muhammad said, the last Savior that he was on earth with us. He said, I can't understand you all. He was speaking to the Imam. Why you don't invite our people out? Now, I'm not, you are an exception. You don't have started in a city where there was almost no Muslims, and you built a masjid there with people. I don't think we have that spirit, but if we have enough of us that have that spirit, I believe our people will accept. And it's not necessary for all of them to accept Islam, but accept our social ideology. We have a social ideology. That we have not fashioned. It's a social, a political ideology. We haven't presented. If we present that to our people, I believe that we would win them. And I think when we win the African American people, I believe the rest of the community will fall that domino effect, and we will be the most influential force. We don't want to dominate anybody. We want good Jews to be good Jews, Christians to be good Christians, Muslims to be good Muslims.
Amen, and let me tell you, there's no substitute for getting out. But let me relate this incident, Brother Imam, to you and your listening audience. In the late 80s, the leading African-American woman in terms of Selma community politics, Miss Rose Sanders, the wife of Senator Hank Sanders, she approached me when I first came to Selma about working with her at what we call Saturday University with teenagers and young children. And I used that forum to start, I guess I would call, my first rudimentary community development class. In that class was a young lady and two of her brothers. 2 weeks ago, she stopped me in court and told me, "Brother Salam, I have been given great responsibility over a strategy that could impact large numbers of African-American males in this town." And I remember what happened when I was in your Saturday University class. She then invited me to come with her to help her craft strategies and what have you to impact large numbers of African-American males in particular, and African-American young people in general, male and female. And I'm looking forward to that opportunity. But that never would have happened if I had not been out there some close 30 years ago working with this young lady. I think she may have been 13, 14 years old at the time.
I think that, we got a few more minutes, and I want you to reflect on close us out with your reflections on this busy week. There's so many things going on, and I'd just like for you to close us out. We have about 5 minutes, and just give us a reflection on the week.
Well, we have been basically hardcore and secular in the sense you suggest that the focus of the program is not to be overly religious in its thrust or in its direction, and certainly we appreciate that, but there's no way that I can look at the events of the last month in terms of global reality without thinking about the idea of a time when there would be commotion followed by oft-repeated commotion. And I think basically that's the time that we're living in. And it is indeed great and dreadful. Great for those who's rooted in the pattern academically of being a believer, and dreadful for those Iblisian type souls who would challenge the plan of God. So this is a great day for us, and we can see the hand of God, the work of God manifesting over and over again in terms of these impactful events, repeated, followed by other impactful events. This young man had barely been removed from handcuffs before we saw this incident in New Hampshire. This young man had barely stomped this man in Frederick Douglass High School in Baltimore, and bam, out in California, we see 9 law enforcement people taking down a African-American male allegedly for simply jaywalking. So we definitely are looking at cataclysmic events, tremendous events, great events, followed by all repeated events. And hey, as a student of Quran, as one who would like to be a believer, this is what God has promised a human being in his day of Yom HaDin, and it gives us an opportunity to get out and provide answers for those souls who have been longing for explanations. that has been to this of lack of clarity that has been generated, this confusion by these events followed by oft-repeated events. Brother Imam, that's not quite 5 minutes. Certainly, if you would like to spread some icing on the cake, I'm sure I would appreciate it as well as the audience.
I'm somewhat tired, and I got a big meeting tomorrow. But I have enjoyed this thoroughly. I think this interview format is a great interview. That format to get your news views and news analysis. What we are lacking, and that's what Imam Muhammad said Muslim journalists should be, is analysis. We can get news from Huffington Post. We can get news anywhere. What we need is news analysis. And
I don't want
religion informs me. It is, so everything is religion. That's why I live by that. It, you know, we stand on that. So I don't ever want people to think I'm not a religious person, and it informs everything I do and analysis and work and everything else. What we say overt language, this is another time to explain our project. But I thank you, Brother Imam, for your wonderful work. I thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank the audience, too. And we're growing. The audience is growing. And I want you to know we're on the air nearly 4 years down in November. And God is blessing us. Sometimes we don't know where we're going to get the next dollar from and where the next light's going to be on. But God has blessed us to be on the air 4 years. And we had electricity. We had phone, even though Comcast threw us off. One day I just got a letter from them stating they didn't want us on. They said we're using the phone for personal reasons, for business reasons. So you call 800-866 every day. Well, anyway, we still own Comcast, so, you know, now it's no longer with that. Thank you, Brother Imam. Thank God, noble and honorable listener. And we will hear more, Brother Imam, on Sunday, which will be Cultural Sunday. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. Yes.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum.